Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we're going to be talking about who we think or who we want to direct Star Trek 14, Star Trek Forever, as we're calling
Forever.
Mm-hmm. But before we do that, should we talk about a little bit of news?
Yeah, let's talk about a little bit of news.
Okay, this is semi-old news, but that Star Trek Disco trailer.
All the kids are talking about it.
Yes. It was pretty well received.
Yeah.
It was received well by me, and I think you as well.
Yes.
And one of the reasons for that, one of the things which is kind of a standout, is the music from that trailer.
Yeah, it was very good. It really was.
It was very good. The music was composed by a guy named Phil Eisler, who is a television composer primarily. He has done a lot of work in the world of television, including some rather high-profile television shows.
Yeah, and I think you were saying that he worked on, what was the one where there are some production people from Star Trek that he worked with?
Yeah, it looks like Revenge, in particular, is a show which he did, which involved Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts, who are executive producers on Star Trek Discovery. And I imagine that there's a connection there. They probably have a working relationship with him already, but that's by no means the only thing that he's done.
He's done a great number of things.
Yeah. Including like Empire, you know, which is huge.
Yeah.
Shameless. And even a couple movies like How to Be Single, which just came out recently.
Yes, not all of the kids are talking about that, but it is a movie that came out.
From what I think it was Fuller was saying, was it Fuller who said this, that the music in there was sort of an audition piece?
Yeah, which is kind of interesting because I'd say that he's passed the audition because if they had, you know, hey, just throw something together, see what you can come up with, and then everybody loves it, I'd say that he's probably got the job at this point, if he wants it.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. I mean, that music was pretty awesome. And who knows if it's going to have any sort of resemblance to like a theme or whatever from the new show. Probably not. But it's pretty great. You know, it's got this sort of like intensity to it, which I think is really sort of exciting. And has sort of like a weird alien vibe to it. A lot of people are talking about how it feels rather Klingon, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, there are definitely aspects of that to it. The thing that I sort of chew over in my brain is I know that the composer from Hannibal, I figured, was probably the front runner. Maybe he's, you know, occupied or his style doesn't quite suit what they're going for. But something I was thinking about is, you know, I think we're all going into this with the thought that there's going to be one composer for the entire series, or at least this first season. I mean, do you think that this is confirmation that they're going to go for that approach, that they're going to have one person do the music for all of the episodes? Because I was sort of approaching it with the idea that maybe they would switch up composers depending on the feel of the episode.
Well, I think that that's quite possible. I mean, it might not even be the feel of the episode. It might just be the production schedule, you know? So, I mean, it's quite possible and you know, probably even likely that they'll have more than one composer on this show, just like they did on, you know, a lot of the other Star Trek shows, or maybe all of the other Star Trek shows. I mean, the fact that this is like a 13-episode run and the fact that, you know, they're treating it like one big story, essentially,
yeah,
it makes me think that there will be more continuity from episode to episode in terms of the creative staff. You know, I mean, it goes back to that thing that we were talking about a few weeks ago with, I think we were talking about, I don't know, I'm always talking about it, so I don't know, but Soderbergh's, you know, philosophy of television in the modern era being, you know, auteur based and yeah. sort of like feeling like it is all one piece, even if you do have a bunch of different people working on it. But regardless of that, whether he's doing it alone, or assuming that he is doing it, whether he's doing it alone or with, you know, other composers, I imagine that it will feel like it's all being done by, you yeah. know, the same person or a group of people who are definitely working together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you look at something like Harry Potter series, where Williams does the first two movies. Maybe he's a instead of producing director, he's a producing composer.
Yeah.
I don't know if such a title exists, but you know, the Harry Potter themes all feel very much like they belong in the Williams family, although there's some variance.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do the scores for anything beyond the first two, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's excited, you know, it'll be interesting, to see, you know, what this series sounds like, but I think it's off to a great start. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, everything looks like it's really firing on all cylinders. It's all coming together pretty naturally for them.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, moving on to one other little item, which I thought was rather clever. The Bates Motel. Do you watch The Bates Motel?
I do not.
It's by your boy, Carlton Cuse.
I love Carlton Cuse as a producer. I think that he makes great work, but just Bates Motel hasn't made it into the rotation.
It's crazy. Like, I often thought of it in sort of like the same category as Hannibal, because
interesting.
I mean, I love Psycho just as much as I love the Hannibal movies, or at least the first three.
Two.
Hannibal is awesome. Okay.
First two.
Hannibal is
you love
awesome.
You love the first two. I didn't say you didn't love the third one. I just said you love the first two.
Okay. All right. All right. Fair enough. I love the first two and the third. But regardless of that, you know, because of that, I hear like, oh, there's a Hannibal TV show, or, oh, there's a Psycho TV show. And yeah. I think maybe this just speaks to my availability as a television watcher now compared to times past. But like, I remember thinking about that and thinking like, if you would have told me 10 years ago that there was a Bates Motel show on or a Hannibal show on, I'd be like, what? That's crazy. But then if you were to tell me that I wasn't watching them, I'd be like, that's insane. Clearly, I'm tuning in as soon as they air, right? But I'm not. But
no.
I should be.
Well, Hannibal, definitely. Hannibal was, as soon as I read that they were going all the way back to the Red Dragon source material, that they weren't using, you know, Silence of the Lambs as the touchstone, I was like, intrigued, go on. And Bates Motel, I think you're right, is sort of the same approach, although I imagine, I mean, I haven't seen it, but Bates Motel, I think, is a little bit more, I'm grasping for a word, but a little more traditional in its structure, because Hannibal got real experimental at certain points.
I mean,
with what it was pulling off.
That could be. I think Bates Motel has been more of a prequel and that kind of thing, but I've always wanted to see it, and I just haven't got around to it, and it does sound like they're doing some interesting stuff on there. And this upcoming season, which is season 4, I believe, they've announced is going to be their last season. And I think because of that, they're getting more towards the movie, towards the, mm-hmm. in terms of the continuity, right? And they've announced that in season 4, Marion Crane, the character which was originated by Janet Leigh, will be in it. And
yes.
She's going to be portrayed by Rihanna.
Yes.
Now, why do we care about any of this? Well, one, because, you know, obviously Rihanna just did the song for Star Trek Beyond, so she's part of the Star Trek family now. But also, Bates Motel is based on the novel Psycho by Robert Bloch, who was mm-hmm. a writer on the original series. And,
yes.
You know, we actually did a series on commentary Trek Stars where we talk about Psycho, looking at both the book and the movie, which was written by a Next Generation writer, Joseph Stefano.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I actually missed one of those episodes.
Yes.
Because it was when my latest daughter was born.
Excuses.
You know? It just wasn't dedicated enough, Mike.
Anything, you'll do anything to get out of recording one of these, you know?
My 9-month plan came to fruition at just the right time.
Yeah, you really didn't want to talk about that book, did you?
I am more patient than Crawl.
Yeah, but you know, I think that it's kind of interesting the casting of this, because the casting of Marion in the original movie, the Alfred Hitchcock movie, was very, very deliberate. Janet Leigh was a huge star at the time, and yeah. What ends up happening in this movie is very startling, especially considering the choice of actor, you know?
Yeah.
And I think announcing that Rihanna is going to be playing this character in the show harkens back to that in a way.
Yeah, it does. I can't speak to Rihanna's acting abilities. I know that she was in Battleship, which, though featuring Liam Neeson, did not make my watching list, but I suppose it needs to now to be a completist.
Here's the thing about Battleship. It's directed by Peter Berg, who is a fantastic filmmaker who made The Kingdom. Have you seen The Kingdom?
No, I haven't seen The Kingdom.
Oh, watch The
I've
Kingdom.
I've heard good things about it, yeah.
Which is a fantastic movie. And then he was also the director and sort of like creator developer of Friday Night Lights, the television show, having directed Friday Night Lights, the movie.
Friday Night Lights, the movie, was good, really good. And I haven't seen the show, but I've heard nothing but praise for it.
Yeah, if you think that Friday Night Lights, the movie, is really good,
I do.
Like, Friday Night Lights, the show, is going to knock your socks off.
Awesome.
Because it's way better than the movie. Way better than the
That's
movie.
That's a tall order there, Mike.
It's not that tall, but it's still really, really good. It's still a really, really good show.
Cool. Yeah, I'll get around to it. I know that there's got to be somebody in the audience that's like, you haven't watched Friday Night Light. No, I haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, his name is Matthew Rushing.
I didn't want to point fingers, Mike.
But to be fair, he hadn't seen it until like last week either. So, you know, because I was the guy who was pointing at Matthew Rushing being like, you haven't watched it. And then he did. And then I'm like, all right, cool. Nice
there
job.
You go.
So now I'm pointing at you.
He is, literally.
Yeah.
Literally, angry face.
I was actually just watching it before we started recording. I've been rewatching the show, and it's very good. It's very cool. Good. And all of this is to say that Battleship, you would think, would be good since it's made by Peter Berg, but in fact is really, really, really bad.
But see, that's where I pull the rug out from underneath you. And when I found out that there was a movie based on Battleship, I said, even if you got Christopher Nolan, well, okay, Christopher Nolan, maybe no. Maybe that would turn out pretty good. But you know what I'm saying. Like, virtually nobody can turn that movie good. That's just a bad concept from the beginning.
I will say that Battleship has one of the most insane credit cookies I've ever seen. Not in like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing, but in a like, why are we doing this? Wait, what? This is really long. What's going on here?
Does it establish the Hasbro Connected Universe?
No, it doesn't.
Well, then it's a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, I suppose it is. But Rihanna is in that movie. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if she's good or bad because she doesn't really have anything to do.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm always of two minds, though, because, like, I have no objection to it. I'm sure that, you know, they wouldn't have cast her if they couldn't make it work or if she didn't show some aspect of what they're looking for in the person who's going to play that role. But, you know, it's so weird, like, when you have a character where they're essentially rebooting it and she's coming in to play a role, you know how this is going to end. I actually tip my hat to you because you've done a great job of dancing around the ultimate non-spoiler of all time as to Marion Crane's fate. And, you know, like, with her coming in, it's just difficult because whenever you bring in a character like that, I would be very interested to see what they do because you start the stopwatch. You know what's coming. The moment she walks on screen, you're like, all right, well, how long does she have? You know, and if you're watching the show, okay, this is episode 6. It's 13 episodes. She's got max 7 episodes here.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how many episodes she's in. I'm curious to know if it's just like a one-off or what. It's interesting. Or maybe they'll pull the rug out from under us and change things up a bit. I don't know.
It was Marion Crane all along.
But I am excited to see it. And now, especially since I know that it's ending and that it's only 4 seasons, I'm like, that's very manageable. And I think once it's all done, I'll probably just barrel through it at some point, you know. And maybe we can talk about it on this very show.
You have to watch Hannibal first.
Yes, I'm definitely going to. I'm almost done with Wonderfalls. I've been watching a lot of Wonderfalls.
I've been working back through Hannibal instead.
Okay, well, that's fair. I'm working my way up. It's Wonderfalls, then Pushing Daisies, and then Hannibal, right? I'm not forgetting anything.
No, so. I think that's the right order for things.
Yeah. And we've got to keep in mind that American Gods is coming up pretty soon too. So,
yeah, he's really been pushing that on his Twitter feed. I'm not knocking him for it, but yeah. it's definitely intrigued me by this point.
Did you see the trailer?
No.
Oh, it looks really good. Really good. All right, should we move on to our feature?
On to our feature, Mike. I think that's a great idea.
Okay. So we talked about our favorite Star Trek directors, and then we talked about the latest Star Trek director in our conversation about Star Trek Beyond. And as we've been discussing over the past couple of weeks, Star Trek 14 is well on its way. Hopefully the box office will be able to sustain. I mean, there's going to be a Star Trek 14. The thing's already made like $106 million, even if it's not as successful as they want it to be. It's good to go. And Star Trek has always been one of those things like Kevin Smith movies where they make their money in the secondary market. They make their money on video. So, you know.
Well, you know, the only question about Star Trek 14 is, are they going to reboot the look again, or are they just going to continue with the Kelvin timeline? That's the only question.
I think it'll be definitely the Kelvin timeline. As far as, you know, what it looks like, I think that's going to depend on who they get to direct it.
Yes.
So that's the big question. Who are they going to get to direct it? And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And we've decided to do a sort of a three-segment approach. For the first segment of this show, we are going to be talking about who we would want, who our number one pick is, assuming that there are no limits to anything. We could have anyone in the world direct this movie if we had absolute power, unlimited power, you know? And we could call up anyone in the world and say, we want you to direct Star Trek 14. Who would it be? Mm. That's our first thing. Our second thing is going to be, let's bring it down. Let's bring it back to reality, you know, and say, okay, if we were J.J. Abrams, you know, and we were working under his constraints, who would we get to direct it?
Yeah, who do we tap?
Right. And for the third segment, we're going to talk about who we think actually will direct it.
Yes.
All right. So we've each got our picks for each of these three things. We don't know whose the other picks are.
We don't, although I think we can both guess who our number ones are in the If Wishes Were Fishes category.
I'm very interested for yours because I'm not 100% positive what it would be.
Interesting. May I guess yours? Can we kick this off by me guessing who your number one If There Were No Limits director would be?
Sure.
Steven Soderbergh.
See, I thought you were going to say that because that's the way that conversations go. But no, the answer is no, it's not.
And
I think if you were to, you know, sort of play things back in your mind a little bit
Paul
further.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes, it's Paul Thomas Anderson, clearly.
Silly me. I had a 50-50 shot.
Because, I mean, this is, it's true. I mean, it's like a blanket thing. Like I heard a thing where back in the day, we're talking about like in the mid-aughts when Jerry Bruckheimer productions were at their peak, you know, he said that no matter what his movie was, he would always offer it first to two people, Michael Bay and Ridley Scott. they would get first crack at any Bruckheimer production. And once they turned it down, he'd give it to someone else. Which, you know, you start playing it back like Bruckheimer Productions and you're like, that means that, like, at one point Jerry Bruckheimer went to Ridley Scott and was like, hey, you want to direct Coyote Ugly? And then you start thinking, like, what would a Coyote Ugly directed by Ridley Scott look like? And it would look like the most amazing thing ever in the history of movies, I'm sure.
And then he'd have an alien jump in.
That'd
be
cool.
And he'd find out one of the dancers was a robot.
I'd be into that. I'd be into that, you know? But regardless of that, I kind of have that feeling when I'm fantasy casting anything, casting any director, and that's Paul Thomas Anderson, because if I'm going to be completely honest with myself, even if he may not be the best fit for a particular fake movie, if someone were to tell me, like, this person is directing this movie or Paul Thomas Anderson is directing this movie, which do you want to see? The answer is always going to be Paul Thomas Anderson for me.
Sure.
He is the best filmmaker in the world right now. Maybe the best filmmaker ever, in my humble opinion.
That's definitely a bold statement. I love Paul Thomas Anderson myself, so I would not begrudge anybody putting him in that category.
You look at Boogie Nights, and that to me is like the pinnacle of film for me. It doesn't get any better than that. It really doesn't, because it is sort of like the perfect fusion of substance and style. And Paul Thomas Anderson's style is what I respond to most when I'm watching a movie by any director. There's no question.
Sure.
He is, like, his style is what I want to see when I go to see movies. And even though, you know, in recent years, some of his movies haven't quite lived up to what I want them to be, like, on rewatch, I'm always just amazed at what I'm seeing. Like, There Will Be Blood and Inherent Vice and everything. I'm just like, oh my God,
yeah,
this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
I haven't seen Inherent Vice, but I will say that There Will Be Blood is the classic example of a film that you watch where the first time you see it, you don't, I think it's very difficult to fully appreciate exactly how good it is until you rewatch it. And because, you know, any Daniel Day-Lewis movie, you walk out of it thinking Daniel Day-Lewis. And then I would say that There Will Be Blood is one of those rare examples where you could mentally play the game of subtracting Daniel Day-Lewis and you can still say this movie is still some next level. Like, oh, yeah. As a counterpoint to that, I would say take a movie like Gangs of New York. If you take Daniel Day-Lewis out of that as Bill the Butcher, you have, yeah, you know, it's good, but it's not Gangs of New York. You need him as Bill the Butcher. Whereas There Will Be Blood, like, yes, he, you know, Day-Lewis elevated it, but it's still amazing, even if you discount him, as it
were. Oh, yeah, for sure. By the way, did you hear the word on the street is that Anderson's next movie is going to be a movie about the, like, the fashion industry in the 50s or something like that?
Starring
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, so.
Come on. Just shut up and take my money.
Yeah.
Done. Sold.
So, yeah, I mean, that, you know, now there's, for years and years, like, you'd see, like, people like Christopher Nolan directing Batman Begins and Dark Knight, and you'd see what he's doing. And I consider Nolan and Anderson to be on, like, the same level, really. And, you know, I'd look at that and I'd be like, well, if Nolan, someone as artistic and pure, you know, as Nolan can direct a Batman movie, then why can't Paul Thomas Anderson? And I've always thought, like, it would be great to see Paul Thomas Anderson do, like, a superhero movie or something, just because we've seen his amazing visual style in sort of an action setting in things like Boogie Nights and stuff. And in later movies, he's gotten much more sort of reserved when he's been telling, let's say, more serious or smaller stories. But, like, if he were to take that style and apply it to something like Star Trek, I think it would be amazing. I mean, he interviewed Adam McKay when McKay was directing The Big Short, and the two of them are friends. And McKay, like, Paul Thomas Anderson was originally supposed to produce Anchorman, believe it or not.
Wow, that blows my mind.
He backed out because he was too scared, because I guess the original script was absolutely insane. But McKay said, you know what I'd love to see more than anything? I'd love to see Paul Thomas Anderson direct a Transformers movie. You know? And he said it kind of jokingly, but like to Anderson's face. But to me, it's like, that is what I want to see more than anything else. Because what would that look like? I think it would look amazing. And I think that Paul Thomas Anderson directing a Star Trek movie would look amazing. And honestly, I think it would look a lot like a J.J. Abrams movie, you know?
The visual style would be of a family that would belong together. I agree with you.
I mean, that anamorphic photography is something which Anderson has been doing forever. I mean, if anyone wants to complain about the lens flares in Star Trek 09, go take a look at Punch Drunk Love, where lens flares have their own music cues. And yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my pick. As always, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Well reasoned, as always.
Now, what's your pick?
Who do you think? Come on, it's not tough. Take a guess.
See, I mean, I guess the person who would come to mind would be George Lucas.
No.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I mean, that's the person who comes to mind.
You wound me, sir. How long have you known me and you can't guess who my number one slot would be here?
Because you're such a fan of Star Wars and specifically Revenge of the Sith and everything.
I am. Yep, sure
I
am.
I thought it would be George Lucas.
Nope.
I'm sure when you say it, I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, of course.
You already said it yourself, Christopher Nolan.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because I think that Nolan, pretty much all the praise you heaped on Anderson is what I would praise. Like Nolan, there isn't a single movie he's done, even the unfairly maligned Insomnia.
Oh, that's a good movie.
But people don't give it the love it deserves, and people don't give the prestige the attention it deserves. He has not directed a single thing that I have disliked once, or anything that I walked out of where I was like, ugh. Like everything he does for me is gold. Everything he's done sells me on the idea, but then Interstellar? Okay, two things. One, he's obviously comfortable in space and science fiction and all of that stuff and getting the lighting right and all, you know, working with CG and models to great effect. But then I also know that he would actually direct sequences with an IMAX camera. And that would make me happiest because he's the one director out there that I think has truly made the most of taking an actual IMAX camera, a real one, and saying, okay, we're going to make this amazing, and this I'm going to make some action sequences that are going to blow your freaking minds. And that's, I mean, I'd love to see him bring that into Star Trek.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I mean, they had a thing with, I forget what it was. I think it was about film, about shooting on film at, I think, Sundance this year. And they had Colin Trevorrow and Christopher Nolan on the panel. And Colin Trevorrow was talking about making episode 9, and he's like, yeah, it's kind of weird, like, because you have conversations with the studio, like, can I take an IMAX camera up into space to shoot effects plates? And Nolan's like, I had that conversation.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I mean, he, I was really impressed with Interstellar. I mean, by everything in Interstellar, but in particular, like from behind the scenes stuff where he's talking about, like, you know, we are going to, instead of hire a bunch of like visual effects artists to come up with a cool looking wormhole, we're going to hire a bunch of scientists to figure out what a wormhole actually looks like and do that, you know?
Yeah. And to be honest, what would be fascinating about that aspect of it for me is, and I know that I could get chased with pitchforks for saying this, but the last time that there was real effort put into the actual like science of everything was the motion picture. Like everything else was just, it works in the story and we'll come up with an explanation for it. As opposed to the motion picture was like, okay, what's the science of this situation that we're in and how does it work like that? And, you know, and I think that it would be very interesting as well to see if Nolan would prefer to, you know, work with the music and sound in such a way that he did in Interstellar, where he did not rely on cool sounding ship effects and stuff like that. Like it was all music and editing and cutting in and out that made everything work the way that it did.
It would be interesting to see if they let him. I know, like, when Meyer was doing Wrath of Khan, he's like, I don't want any sound in space. And they're like, too bad, you know?
Well, I mean, I think that it would be interesting to see if, yeah, I mean, a battle. Like, it's one thing if, like, in the motion picture they had, you know, done that. But, like, if you're looking at something like Star Trek II where there's a battle, the audience is going to disconnect if there's this giant phaser sequence and you hear nothing with the phaser sound effect.
I think they did a really good job in 09 in that opening sequence because you did have all that stuff. But then, yeah. Like, there's that one part where, like, they show the person gets sucked out into space, and as they do, all the sound drops out, and it's, like, acknowledging, like, there is no sound here. But right. We're putting it in because, it, you know, for you, just for you.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It would be cool.
Sadly, sure. I think that Nolan or Anderson, I definitely think they're dream picks because this is not their usual milieu, if you will.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. So let's take it down a notch and look at it from J.J. Abrams' perspective. You've got to find someone to direct this movie. You know that Paul Thomas Anderson and Christopher Nolan are going to say no, and you probably couldn't even afford them if you wanted them. So who do you get?
Jonathan Frakes.
Nice. I like it.
Make it a fan pleaser, and his visual style in First Contact lends itself, you know, that he has a lot of camera movement and is willing to experiment with, you know, different angles and stuff like that, while at the same time making it have a lot of sense in the visual space. And he has a good sense of pacing. And I think that he would be, I mean, so long as the script is right, I think that Frakes could make it really work.
I could definitely see that. And, you know, he is, you know, sort of an ideal choice as a director for hire in a lot of ways, because that's what he does, you know, as a day job, you know, as a television director. You know, lots of times I think he's coming in directing other people's work, and you know, it seems to be a good fit for him. You know, it's interesting because while I don't think that he has a shot at this, and I know that there was like that campaign to get him to direct this, and he was like, yeah, let's do it, you know, but, you know, it obviously didn't happen. I would honestly be surprised if he's not hired to direct an episode or two of Disco.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay, that's a good pick. I'd be down with that.
Who's your J.J. Abrams? And Paul Thomas Anderson has said, how did you get my phone number? And so that conversation has ended awkwardly. Who do you call next?
I call the current day reincarnation of Paul Thomas Anderson, Damien Chazelle, who has a relationship with Bad Robot. You know, like looking at Whiplash, which is the one film which he's directed so far, I'd be like, I think he's a little too artsy. I don't know if he would go for this. But then you hear like, oh, well, he rewrote 10 Cloverfield Lane. And it's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, in that case, you know, maybe he's game for this. You know, obviously he has a relationship with Bad Robot and J.J. Abrams. They're obviously very happy with the work that he did on 10 Cloverfield Lane. And who's to say, you know, he's got his new movie, his first, like, studio production coming out, La La Land, which looks amazing, by the way.
It does. It looks very good. It really does.
So who's to say that, you know, he wouldn't be like, yeah, I'll do that. Sounds like fun. You know?
I think that's a good pick, and I think you're right to highlight the Bad Robot relationship, because why wouldn't Abrams reach out to somebody that he's worked with before and say, hey, you know, I mean, just like they're doing with you know, a lot of the people on Discovery. Mm-hmm. You know, Fuller's reaching out to people that he, you know, it's so much easier, and there's such shorthand when you know the person that you're working with.
Yeah.
You know, how to make it fly.
And, you know, while they did hire him as a writer, you know, he's proven himself as a director. His first picture got nominated for Best Picture, you know? Yeah. And La La Land has a lot of, you know, good buzz behind it as well. Clearly, he knows how to direct a movie, and I want to see him direct a Star Trek movie. So, yeah, if I were J.J. Abrams, he would be the first person that I'd call, seriously. I'd call Paul Thomas Anderson just to see what would happen. But assuming he turned me down, I'd call Damien Chazelle, no doubt.
He'd All be right. my pick. That totally works. So who do you think will get it? Who do you think the odds-on choice is?
You know, it's interesting because you could say, like, I mean, with this time, you know, when Orsi left the project, it really seemed like they were trying to get someone who fans would be like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, for a while there, they were talking about, like, Edgar Wright was their Paul Thomas Anderson, you know, or their Christopher Nolan. And, you know, he wasn't going to do it because he just got kicked off of a big studio production. He wasn't going to take someone else's place now, you know? And, you know, like you listen to some of the stuff that he says now and he's like, I saw less movies this summer than I have in any year in recent memory because it's all sequels and remakes, you know? He wants to do something new, even though he is working with Abrams. You know, he's doing an original science fiction movie with Abrams right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that someone like him would do it. And the question is, like, would they try to go after another big name, like, say, Bryan Singer or something like that? Or are they at a point now where they've earned the audience's trust and they're going to go with someone who may not be a huge name, but maybe a slightly more affordable choice while at the same time guaranteeing a quality product? And I think that's the way they're going to go, especially if the box office is doing what it looks like it's doing. They're going to make Star Trek on the cheap, just like, you know, they did with Wrath of Khan. And that doesn't mean
they did with Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4 and Star Trek 5.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that doesn't mean that it's going to be bad, but it means that they might go with someone who's not a name. And the person who stands out to me in terms of, like, who's working with who and everything is honestly the other person who was on 10 Cloverfield Lane, Dan Trachtenberg.
Oh, that would be an... Okay. See, there you go. That's where you beat me in the thinking, is that bad robot connection again. Is spot on, and it would be an opportunity for Trachtenberg. He's got one under his belt, and so come on in and direct something even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, higher profile, sure.
Right, and you know, I mean, like, you look at the, you know, the visuals and everything in 10 Cloverfield Lane, the way that he gets performances out of, you know, people like Goodman, and it's like, yeah, he's a solid, solid director. And I can definitely see him, you know, taking on the challenge, and I can see him hitting it out of the park.
Yeah, I could see that. Sure.
So who's your pick? Who do you think they're going to get?
Believe it or not, I'd go with Justin Lin because I loved what he did. I thought the movie was really enjoyable, and I would like to see him get an opportunity to direct a Trek film with a little more time behind it. Instead of scrapping it and starting from scratch, give him something where you say, okay, here's normal production time for you. Now let's see what you can, you know, what you can bring to it. And I, you know, even set up the tradition then with Star Trek movies, so long as they're with Bad Robot, at least, of directors doing two in a row. So you have like this sort of duology stamp on the series.
Yeah. You know, I mean, given the critical reception of this movie and the fact that he was able to pull this thing together in like 5 minutes, I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that the first call they make is going to be to Justin Lin. You know, I think that he's earned it and it's his if he wants it. That being said, from basically everything that he's been saying all the way back, you know, to when he's first started giving interviews about this, when the first trailer dropped, it really sounds like while he totally enjoyed his time working on this movie, like, he's called it a detour, you know, and he's talked about how, like, there were a number of passion projects which he was developing and getting ready to start when this thing came up. Mm-hmm. And I think he really did this because he saw it as a once in a lifetime opportunity. But I think after having just done it, he's going to take a step back and, you know, do something else instead. Like, he has his L.A. Riots movie, which he really wants to do. He's been developing Space Jam, Lone Wolf and Cub, a bunch of things. And it wouldn't surprise me if he says, no, I'm not going to do it. But then after he gets a few other things, you know, out of his system, much like J.J., you know, did himself with Super 8, I wouldn't be surprised if, given the opportunity, he comes back and does Star Trek 15.
Huh. So 14 goes to, let's lay odds then of the names we've tossed around. We're saying that Lynn is a probable first call, but probably not going to take it for his own reasons.
That's my guess.
It's very, you know, it's very well reasoned. It really is. I mean, he hasn't in interviews been sounding like, oh, I can't wait to come back for 4. The most committal he's been is, well, let's see how this one does. You know, like it's almost like he's prepared to leave. So you would see a scenario where 14 is Trachtenberg and then 15 Lynn comes back.
And you know what? You could even go so far as to say, because, you know, we know that Payne and McKay are writing number 14, right? But people have asked both Jung and Pegg, like, would you want to come back to write another Star Trek movie? And they're both like, yep, we would. You know, independently, like, Jung would be like someone said, like, if you were given a chance to write, you know, the next movie, would you do it? And Jung said, I'd be at Paramount's gates tomorrow morning, you know, and he's writing another movie for Bad Robot right now. Peg obviously has a very strong connection to Bad Robot. So, hey, you know, who knows? Maybe there's a scenario where 14 gets made and then they reunite the Beyond team for Star Trek 15.
Yeah, but, you know, I think you're being dismissive of Peg's own passion projects like Unkar Plutt, A Star Wars Story.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't chalk that, you know, off the list right there.
Yeah, maybe. Well, he might be waiting, you know, like with Edgar Wright, you know, it took them forever to do World's End because they all had their other things.
Yeah.
So maybe they're just waiting for their schedules to line up, and maybe in between now and the Unkar Plutt, you know, spinoff. He can do his Star Trek 15.
So there
script.
You go. We've broken it right here. Unkar Plutt, A Star Wars Story. That's coming in 2020.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah. All right. Well, those are some good options. We've done Bad Robot's work for them. All they need to do is make some phone calls and work out some money and all that good stuff. And
we expect a finder's fee if we got any of the names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it. I'd be happy with anyone mentioned by either of us, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I think that these names work, and I don't know. There's that little tickle on the back of my brain. How much fun would it be to have Frakes come back? I mean, just having his name on it is such fan service.
It would be fun, but at the same time, I think we'll get that with Disco. And I'm okay with that, too, you know?
Well, we know that he can direct for the small screen pretty darn well.
Yes, this is definitely true. This is definitely true. Well, it's been fun talking about potential directors for Star Trek 14 today, but that's not all we're talking about this week on Trek FM, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
I like the way that they were able to weave, you know, she says you can't allow the concern for a single crewman to affect the mission. And that's actually one of the deeper, richer moments in this episode. In fact, it's probably the only really deep, rich moment in the episode.
Right.
The 602 Club.
It is time for us to explore Superman and the questions about him in a new and different way in the context of the world in which we live. And that's what Snyder is doing. People just don't like it because, you know what? Superman hasn't changed, but the world in which Superman's trying to serve has.
Meta Treks.
The only thing it was missing was a Geordi PowerPoint.
Yeah, about the closest thing we have to a Geordi PowerPoint in Star Trek Beyond, Mike, is Spock trying to point out the location of Uhura's radioactive tracking device necklace.
He gave her a radio tracking device necklace.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You'll find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. We have to thank our associate producers.
Yes, thank you.
Jeff Sutter and Chris Steftenagel. Thank you very much, guys, as always. We appreciate your support, and we couldn't do it without you.
Not in the least.
And if you want to be like Jeff and Chris and become an associate producer on the show, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm, where you can become a patron of the network. There you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you, including early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, and seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. And, you know, our associate producers are so great. You know, Jeff, not only producing the show, also leaving us a review on iTunes.
A delightful review where he, and this really does capture the spirit of Stage 9, I feel. The title of the review is, "It's Like School, But Fun," which actually, that's, I mean, honestly, you've encapsulated us.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me.
He says, "I actually do learn something new every time I listen to Mike and John's weekly discussions revolving around Star Trek Creative's other works. They obviously like and respect one another, and listening to whatever topic is at hand is always enjoyable. These guys know their stuff, and I'm happy when some of it rubs off on me. Aspect ratios, anyone? A well-produced, high production quality podcast, typical of the exemplary work found on Trek FM. Keep up the great work, gentlemen. I look forward to hearing you every Friday. Thanks." And thank you, Jeff. We greatly appreciate that review, and I am glad that it comes across, at least, that we respect one another, Mike. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm glad it comes across that way, too.
Yeah.
No, and just in case, Jeff, just in case we let you down this week and you didn't learn anything, here's a little bit of trivia, which I find to be rather interesting, which doesn't have anything to do with anything at all other than the fact that it's interesting. Yes. Did you know that the city of Chicago employs one window washer for all of its public buildings? And since he has no way of washing all of the windows in the city, he gets a schedule of the mayor's appearances for the following day. And he just goes to wherever the mayor is going to be tomorrow and washes the windows in that building.
That is pretty cool. I didn't know that. I've learned something, and Jeff, we hope you've learned it too. That's very cool.
Yeah.
But before we go, we actually have another review, Mike, in iTunes, with the title "Stage 9 equals Stars 5," which by Clever. User Wildcat 1. "Mike and John have such great discussions of the people who make Star Trek. I enjoy thinking and hearing about more technical aspects of filmmaking and film. I hope they keep up the great work." Thank you, Wildcat. That's a wonderful review, too. Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And, you know, we would ask that other people leave reviews on iTunes as well, because it helps us get pushed up into the iTunes algorithm or whatever, and makes it easier for other people to find the show. And as a thank you to people who are leaving reviews, we are having a little bit of a contest this month for a poster, IMAX poster.
A pretty excellent exclusive IMAX poster that was handed out for IMAX showings of Star Trek Beyond. And
I think it was just for people who went to the trilogy marathon the day before it came out.
Even more exclusive.
Yeah,
and if you want an idea of what the poster looks like, we used it on the previous episode, our review of Star Trek Beyond, our discussion about it.
Yeah, and this is not, it's not just like a little, like, you know, little tiny thing. Like, this is a one sheet sized poster, which, by the way, another bit of trivia, the term one sheet, that doesn't just refer to like a movie poster. Like, you can't say like, well, this is, and they use this term all the time and it drives me crazy. This is a mini one sheet. That's not a thing, because one sheet refers to a very specific sized poster, which I don't remember what the size is off the top of my head, but comparing it to my other posters, and I haven't unrolled it, but looking at the width anyway, this appears to be one sheet sized, which is very substantial, but it's horizontal, but it's cool looking nonetheless.
It is. It's a wonderful piece of art. It really is. So get on over and give us a review, and we will put your name in the hat, your username in the hat, for a copy of this poster.
Yeah, and we're going to keep this contest going through the end of August, and then we will announce the winner on our 50th anniversary show, which hopefully will be on September 8th, but maybe September 9th.
Will be on September 8th. It will be, maybe. Possibly on September 9th. We'll see.
So, yeah, if you want to contact us, you can contact the network on Twitter at TrekFM, or you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference, which is our listener forum. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at trek.fm and click the discussion tab on the menu bar. Where can people find you, John?
Well, you can find me crawling around Twitter at Kessel Junkie, and you can find me on the podcast Aggressive Negotiations. It's a Star Wars podcast over on the Nerd Party Network, and on a podcast with my buddy Craig called Words with Nerds. Where can they find you personally, Mike?
They can find me right here on Trek FM, producing From There to Here, which is Trek FM's daily rewatch of the entire franchise from beginning to end for the 50th anniversary. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. All right. Well, that pretty much takes care of this here topic. Next week, we're going to be doing sort of a split show. We're both going to be on it, but not together. We're going to... I'm going to be in Vegas for the convention, or I am in Vegas right now. Oh, my God. If you're in Vegas right now, come track me down.
Look for Mike. I guarantee you he's wearing a baseball cap.
Yes, probably a White Sox cap, though maybe not, depending on the day. And I'm going to be talking to Adam Drozin of Saturday Morning Treks. About the stuff which has happened in Vegas, involving Star Trek creators. And then for our feature, John is going to be joined by someone. Do you know who yet?
A mystery guest.
A mystery guest talking about a mystery topic.
Yes.
Just tune in next week to find out what that is.
We promise, though it's a mystery, it will not be spooky.